Welcome everybody to the Five Classroom Book Club. We're here for meeting three and discussing chapter four. My name's Ben and I am one half of Engaging Educators. We are running the book club here for Vicki and Julie. My partner in crime is Neil. I think he'd like to say hello. We're joining you from the Detroit area today. Here's Neil.
Hi everybody, Neil from Detroit as well. Super excited about today's book club. Chapter 4 has a lot of great resources for flattening your classroom, but also just having good sort of etiquette. So looking forward to hearing the conversation. Back to you, Ben.
All right, thanks. And we'd like to have everybody check in, and as our friends join us, have them also get their audio set and ready. You can do that in the tools menu and just choose audio from the tools menu. You can make sure your mic and your speakers are working just great. We want everybody joining in both in the chat and via microphone. If at any time you want to interrupt us or make sure we call on you, please click the little raise hand button. It's right in the participants menu. I just clicked mine, it'll go like that. And it's the third one from the left there. We'd also like to welcome you to check in and see where everybody's coming from here today. On the little whiteboard tools here, the second one down is a little pointer. If you choose the little star, you can point that and click right on the map where you're from. We'd love to see where everybody's from. Just choose that second one down and change it to a little starburst and let us know where you're from. We've got folks from all over. Sorry, Neil, I took most of Michigan up there for you. Looks like we've got a growing group here as folks are coming in. And we want to also welcome in authors Julie, Lindsay, and Vicki Davis. Before first we're going to have time for a poll. If you see the little check mark next to the raised hand that says yes or no, if you could give us a yes, if you are a classroom teacher, choose yes if you are a classroom teacher right now, and we'll see what our totals are. Classroom teachers. Okay, looks like that's the majority of us. Double duty there for Julie, too. Any other, how about checks for administrators? Any administrators with us today? Have one checking in, two. Fantastic. Another good mix. And a lot to discuss here in Chapter 4. I wanted to throw it to Vicki and or Julie to maybe say hi and maybe some introductory thoughts on Chapter 4 communication.
Sure, I'll go. This is Vicki Davis, just back in from Canada. Most of the day resting today, trying to get over. I've got a sick child, and I appreciate all your tweets. And you know, I think that building the communication conduit and coming up with some consistent ways, I think is very important. One thing I wanted to mention is kind of an update. We go through all of the online meeting practices and how you teach your source and that sort of thing. But I do want to add, we're using Trello now as our project management tool, our workflow software, and that wasn't in the book, so we're trying to actually get that in the update. But I also wanted to point out that I'm convinced that one of the things that underlies an effective project is this whole idea of teacher sourcing and building a community of practice and the habits, both among the teachers and the students. And this is what it's going to take to reach our dream of sustainable, ongoing, student-run projects that just pass from year to year to year. I don't know whether it'll take the form of a massive student Wikipedia or what it'll be, but you know, I do know that at some point we'll get there, and it's going to take community of practice, things like that underlie Wikipedia. So I'm excited to talk about this, and also excited to see so many people kind of really start to understand what it takes to run global projects, because we're starting to see the impact in our own projects, and I know that others are as well. So looking forward to this week, and thanks for coming, everybody.
Everyone, Julie Lindsay here from Beijing, China, just after 6 a.m. in the morning. It's great to be here. Just a quick apology, I'm going to have to leave in about 30 minutes, so that will be my exit. I'll just say bye and get to work. Chapter 4 is one of the great chapters in the book, because we talk about methods for communication that include synchronous and asynchronous. I think one of the common misconceptions about global collaboration is that it can only happen in a synchronous mode. And I think we talk a lot about our experiences and other people contribute in this chapter in terms of how they communicate with other people around the world, the strategies that we have for actually communicating during or before, during and after a project, and how we keep that communication going to effectively support the collaboration that's needed. So I think, and we see this, as Vicky said, our projects are improving every year. It's just amazing how people are understanding how effective communication can improve essential connection and collaboration. But at the same time, teachers need to be aware that if you don't communicate, you can make that essential connection, but if you don't keep that communication going, well, then things start to fall apart. It's so important. Anyway, thanks, Ben and Neil. But back to you.
As I said earlier, I think that communication is really sort of a skill that goes beyond just studying in a classroom. And I think that somebody who trained Ben and me in literacy talked about how writing is sort of the formation of thought. And this idea of communication in 21st century communication, communicating is sort of how you formulate your thoughts, whether it's inside your head or leaving your head. And with the 21st century, there are so many more avenues, but also so many more issues. And here's what I'm curious about is what methods people are using currently, and grade specific. I think that especially with teaching kids who are in upper elementary, like Ben and I are, a lot of the 21st century social media tools are technically off limits. So you are using Google Chat, using Skype. What are some of the ways that people are communicating in their classes right now?
And again, we want to make sure folks that are grabbing the mic is please, who can grab the mic and share with us some of their communication tools. Go ahead, Kathy. Welcome, Kathy. And Kathy, if you're able, you can just click that talk button right underneath what's should be my picture right now.
Okay, here we go. I'm very, very new at this. I'm a fourth grade teacher in Geneva, Illinois, and I started using a wiki space with my students last year, and I'm currently taking a class that we're meeting once a week that Donna Roman is running for us, and she's using the flattening classroom to engage in my book. And so I thought I'd just move them in, and I'm very, very nervous about this. I have used the wiki spaces, but I have completely changed my mind. I have a 22-year-old and an 18-year-old daughter, and I was not really happy with the social networking that these youngsters use, but I am quickly changing my mind and realizing that if we show them how to use it in a very positive way, it can be a great thing.
Thank you, and we're very interested to hear how that goes, and don't be nervous, we're here for you, and Donna's great, so she'll take care of you, too. Anybody else want to share theirs?
I did notice that a lot of people on the chat on the site, I'm talking about Skype and blogs, and a lot of other things that are mentioned in the book as well. I think my favorite part of the whole chapter actually is the section in here called Some People Are Posers, and talking about how people online aren't always who they seem to be, which is true, you know, online and in person as well. And I'm wondering what people have done as far as lesson planning or conversations people have had with their students to help handle this. I think it can be pretty devastating to have somebody not be who you think they are as a person.
Yeah, that's a great point, Neil, and I'd love to hear what some folks are talking to their students about, because that's such a key element here. So who could join in and share that question, share their answer. And again, the question being, how are you dealing with the ideas of some of the issues with communication, particularly in the part here. Some people are posers. Again, we do want you to join in, but I think too, while we wait for somebody to raise their hand and let us know how they feel about that part, these conversations that you're able to have, these conversations that you almost have to have as you work through these collaborative projects are so important. And the idea of what communication is and what it can turn into, these are required, and that's a great thing. Go ahead.
So right now my class is planning an end slavery. It's called May Day, and I'll be sharing about it on my blog this week. But we're kind of really seeing that a lot, particularly in this topic. Anytime you have money involved, anytime you have some sort of organized crime type thing involved, you end up with a lot of posers, people saying they are who they're not in order to deceive you. And, you know, that particular issue has a lot of posers. And, you know, there are even posers in education, people who talk a great game about 21st century learning, and then you try to collaborate with them, and it's a very hard thing to do. So just because a teacher has an amazing blog or something amazing doesn't mean they're always a great collaborator. It's the three R's of global collaboration. Are you receiving, are you reading, and are you responding? And, you know, it's a tough one because you always want to respect each person. But, you know, I think that when I get to know a teacher's students, then I really get to know the teacher, and some of the folks in here are some incredible teachers because I've gotten to know their students. And you can kind of judge a teacher very much by what their students do. But that's just a note I have in terms of posing, because there are posers everywhere, and I think it's just kind of another word for hypocrisy. And we're all probably a little bit that way. None of us are as good. I don't have wrinkles from halfway across the room, but I do when you get close. So I guess all of us are in some ways, but we do need to teach students to discern about posers.
There's a great deal of many things we have to teach them to discern. I want to take it into this next question here, and Julie brought this up in her welcome note there, but this is what I thought was something that's at the core of everything the Flag Classroom is about, and understanding how the asynchronous and the synchronous are blended together in the Flag Classroom really is important, because without a knowledge of this, I think you're missing out on a lot of things. And on page 67, what it goes through talks about some opportunities and challenges of communication. And for those of us, maybe not with the book, the synchronous communication, you're talking live, happening at the same time. So our chat room here is synchronous. Our conversation right now is synchronous. Asynchronous would be those that don't happen at the same time, like Facebook or Twitter, blogs, or wikis, or things like that. So the blending of these two, I don't know if we have, I didn't notice if we had any Flag Classroom veterans in the room, so maybe Julie or Vicki would have to talk about this, but is there somebody who could talk about how the blend of these two is so important, or maybe Mark or anybody else, the blending of synchronous and asynchronous. Go ahead, Mark, welcome.
I'm still very new to both of these types of communications, and in DigiTeam, what I found is that there was kind of a common misconception among my students that we were going to Skype all the time during class, and they were a bit disappointed when I told them that we were going to have kind of a blend of that and things that weren't live, and we haven't really Skyped that much, and I think that they're having trouble kind of making the connection that they are. That they are collaborating with students through the wiki, through Edmodo. They are having trouble kind of understanding that piece of it without actually seeing the students through Skype. So I think that blend, once we get some live conversations going, once they start seeing the people who they are working with, I'm hoping that's going to hit home more. But we'll just kind of have to see how things go so far.
I know he's jumping in kind of a little bit as far as the chat room goes, but I think that the handshake that Vicki mentioned is the first thing that popped in my mind as well. And we've had some experience actually setting up these handshakes. I'd be really interested in hearing how you go about doing that. What's the most effective way to introduce two classes? I know that in a face-to-face classroom, we share a common movable wall with our colleagues in our building, and we always do an activity in the beginning of the year to help introduce the kids and each other. So what are some of those ways that people are effectively shaking hands for these 21st century Flat Classroom projects?
I do want to bring Carol's hand went up there in the middle of that, Neil, so I'm going to bring her in and then we'll answer your question. Go ahead, Carol, welcome.
I find the most important thing is planning. I think when you're doing, because a lot of times you're talking to composers and stuff, I find that sometimes people think they know a lot about tech and I sort of know, and when you get together and trying to put it all together. But when I did projects, I always made sure that one teacher and I really knew each other a lot before we brought our classes in. And so before we brought our classes in, my students sort of knew about the class before. So they were looking for students, because we did a collaborative project about the Winter Project and stuff. So I think that, you know, the preparation is the key, because then the kids are invested in it because they're actually looking across and looking for different people and looking at the classroom and not being so amazed that, oh, we're Skyping. They've gotten beyond that. There's a purpose.
Oh, I really like that there's a purpose, and I think what jumped out to me, again, before we head to Neil's question here, what jumped out to me, and again, what you said is the planning not being so important. Because when you plan it out, then you're able to choose from those synchronous and asynchronous tools and figure out which ones work best for you. Neil was asking about the handshakes. Has anybody worked with those handshakes? I think that's an incredibly powerful tool, and I'd love to hear some firsthand stories about those. Go ahead.
Well, to me, it's just, and Carol, I don't know if you had already, I think you had already spoken. I'm not sure, though, sorry. But, you know, doing things to help humanize or realize that the other person is a human, like the videos that I just shared in the NetGen project, as well as we like to have all the classes put their times on what we call our class times calendar and see the overlap. It is very important, Mark. You're going to find they have one or two synchronous, and then once they realize the other person is real, then they'll start working, and then you'll actually find that future projects that view of I have to Skype with them will change because they do realize that other person is real.
So are you suggesting, Vicki, that you do a synchronous sort of to begin with, and that leads into the asynchronous more fluently?
If you can, I think that, you know, the handshake process is kind of, in the K-2 pilot, if you'll just cry when you see those handshakes. But, I think it's important to start off helping the students know that it's a real person, either video or a real synchronous interaction, either one. I think both of them help. Let's hear from the others.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark. Love to hear from you, and then we'll go to Michael.
One thing that we did with two of my, I believe that they were my fifth grade classes, is that I had them both start, blogs, and they started commenting on the things from their own classrooms, and then I had them blog with a classroom in a state of up north. And so they were kind of commenting on like the blogs back and forth. And then when we actually got to Skype with them, they were very excited, and they were actually asking for certain students because they knew like the comments that they had gotten from each one of their blog entries. So that actually was really powerful to see that they had kind of that prior meeting, and then when they actually met, it was very exciting.
Go ahead, Michael Grafson's here.
Good morning, everyone. I'm pretty sure you guys can hear me. I'm just starting to realize what we were doing when we started the Global Classroom Project last year. Trying again. Can you hear me now? Sorry, my audio is this crap that we've been. Okay, thanks, guys. Having trouble with the blackboard ever since I re-imaged my computer. Yeah, it's 6:24 in the morning, so we've got to talk quietly, otherwise someone's going to bang on the wall. I'm just starting to realize what we were doing when we started the Global Classroom Project, and particularly what Tina Smith was doing with her Flat Stanley. She was doing Flat Stanley in Romania, and I was sitting back and quite amazed at the work she was doing with her students and sharing videos and photos of the classrooms. And reading this book has started to give me the language for what she was doing and for also what we were doing, because we had a launch webinar where we basically brought teachers together and we shared our projects. We brought our little photos in of our classrooms, and it's really starting to explain the work and also give us some ideas for how we can start connecting and start a project. Although I must admit the ongoing connections have been a bit difficult at times, but it's something we can work on next year.
I think I'm really enjoying hearing these stories from your classrooms, and they're just so powerful and meaningful. And a couple of people have mentioned that they're new to this and trying things out, and it's just so exciting for me, because I feel the same way a lot of times when I try new stuff in the classroom. It's just so nice to have us all here together. We can talk to each other. Want to move forward here to talk about the communication habits. There's a big section on page 74 here about setting up good habits for long-term success. And this, again, is another one of those things I don't think you can ignore. And also one of those things that, you know, it isn't in my curriculum, it isn't in my state standards, but so critical that our kids know how to communicate and that we give good habits. And so the question I wanted to open here is, what habits are you teaching your kids as you communicate with others, or even as you communicate within your own classroom? What are some of the ways you're trying to help your kids and your students communicate effectively? Who'd like to talk about how they're doing that?
One thing I've noticed in my class, not going across other classrooms, but just in my own room, is we do exhibitions a couple times a year, where all the students get up in front of everybody and speak about a topic for about 15 or 20 minutes. And in the past, the students all had to sit silently and wait for the students to finish, and then ask a couple of questions and tell them what they liked. But in the past year or so, we started back channeling throughout the exhibitions to the point where, when I don't want to back channel for an exhibition, the kids complain and actually force them to do it, and then also force their parents to join the back channel. And it's been a good experience in the beginning, not understanding how to communicate effectively through chatting, but by the end actually having really detailed conversations that enhance and enlighten the audience with the topic being discussed. So starting small, even within the class, I think is a good place to start with communication habits. Go ahead, Carol.
One of my biggest problems, it almost took me 2 years to cross this bridge. I had a lot of podcasts. I'm a music teacher, and so my kids can put up great music files with pictures and everything. And they're commenting was, oh, that's cool, that's rad. And it was really difficult for me to try to push past that, where I had to actually put down rules and try to push them into actually commenting better. And so actually when I finally did a global project, it was the global project that made them comment better, because the students began to question, the other students began to question, like, how did you do this? And I like that. And because I could see them questioning, my class began to question better. So the global project just enhanced what I was trying to do for 2 years within the group. It didn't work, but when we went outside the classroom, that's when actually the commenting and the communication got better. Go. Come off.
Hi, Julie here. Just a quick word about communication habits in terms of the sort of tools that you use, and I think we all talk about this idea of the back channel in the chapter as well, and how really you need to be talking about the netiquette for back channel for all ages. I mean, we do back channeling as a staff at school, not very often, because I still find that my teachers struggle with it. They actually struggle with taking it seriously, which is surprising. They actually act like little kids sometimes. Not very good role models. Luckily, it's in a staff meeting, not in a mixed forum of students and teachers. But it's just interesting, you know, that that to propel these communication methods into actual habits, people need to understand how you can communicate meaningfully using the technology. And don't treat it as though it's just a silly social chatting tool. Thanks. Hi, David. Thanks for that as well. Yeah, I know Vicky and I have done back channeling at conferences with mixed success as well, but I know that it's such a powerful way to communicate, and someone like Carl Fish does wonderful back channeling implementations into his classroom, where he has this sort of fishbowl effect with the people in the outer circle in a back channel are communicating, while the people in the inner circle are actually talking face to face. I think those sort of communication methods, whether they're, you know, in the classroom and synchronous and inviting virtual people in through the back channel, are just so powerful. These this is rubbish. So something, you know, it's not a good reason not to do it, but it's a good reason to talk about it as a teacher, faculty, as a, you know, with your students, etc., and introduce these new methods with good scaffolding so people understand what they're there for. Thanks.
Yeah, that's just great info, Julie, and so true. And what I was thinking of is there are just so many different ways to communicate now. And when we talk about 21st century communication, the number of ways to communicate, whether it's a Facebook post or a blog comment, or a back channel, or a Skype conversation. And as teachers, I, at least as a teacher myself, I feel responsible for teaching my students how to do that properly, and not just, you know, throwing them out there into the world of social media and back channels and global collaboration without helping them learn how to do that. If they don't help them learn how to do it, who is going to help them?
Something that I've done in the past, we've streamed videos online and actually had our classes back channel about the videos. By doing it that way, the biggest sort of foot in your mouth you can make is only with a couple people in your class, rather than, you know, like the chapter talking about offending other cultures based on the AdSense ads that pop up. But by having with the video, no student is putting themselves in front of the audience, in front of the class, to be critiqued or to have questions asked of them. And it was practice. And in all honesty, when Ben and I did it, it was pretty close to a train wreck. But we learned from it, and we actually got to move forward and actually use it with students. And it became much more effective because we had a chance to sort of model it and practice it in a safe environment.
And I don't want to take up too much of the conversation here either, because I want to hear some more things from our participants here, of course. But just a note on the back channel, this came to mind is just the voice that you're giving students when you teach it, and when you use it. We watched a webinar together, Neil and I, in our classes last year, and it was about a book series called The 39 Clues, and I found that some of the most insightful and deep and critical comments were coming from a pair of students who I'm back telling, who normally would not even talk in class. And so that was very profound for me too. It gave them a voice, so I thought that was terrific. Also wanted to point out, and I'll try to dig up a link, but Sylvia Tolisano, I think, her Twitter name is @languages, puts out some pretty good graphics on Skype sessions and how to arrange your room during Skype sessions, and you actually have a back channel going on while folks are Skyping too, and that can be powerful. I'm going to pass over here to Kathy. Thanks for listening to me, everybody.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. Again, the only thing I've done is a looking space within my classroom. And it was so fascinating to see. I truly thought that I wanted to start this with a reading group that was an above-level reading group, because I thought they would be able to handle it fast. But after talking with the reading specialist, I changed that, and I included all my students, and it was a discussion. After we read each chapter, there was a question that they were to go home and answer. And first of all, before I even started this, I made it very clear to them what my expectations were for them when they posted their comments, that they were to answer the question. And I also modeled for them, if a student made a comment, how we could respond to that comment, and again, instructing, making positive comments. So I was really glad I did that, because the results were I couldn't have even believed it myself, and to see the conversations going on, and my readers, who were really below grade level, but we were reading the same novel together, because this was a very rich novel. It was very interesting to see how they would answer the questions first, and you could see that they really hadn't thought about the question. But as the discussion went on and other students were making comments, you could watch these students reformulate their thoughts, and also watch the students make the comments, encouraging each other, telling each other that it's a good point. At some point, some of the students would say, "It's a second, what do you think?" And I would have never, ever thought that would happen. And it was just proof that including all these students, regardless of where they're at in academics, and what they can do, it really was a very rich experience.
I seriously do get the goosebumps sometimes when a kid will say something as simple as good point to another kid or great idea, and that just is a great story there. I wanted to throw it to Michael here if he had his hand up. And if you're joining us, welcome. We're talking communication habits in Chapter 4. We'd love to hear from you.
I don't really have much experience with students back channeling in the classroom, but one thing that I have found is we run a global classroom Skype group, which was created by a guy named Stefan in Denmark. Now, through that group, we actually discovered a whole group of people throughout Europe who belong to another Skype group, which is called Hello Little World Skypers. Between these two groups, we've really found a community of educators who are more than willing to help each other chat on absolutely anything under the sun. And this led to the most amazing connections, both for ourselves as teachers and for our students, often unexpected connections, coming out of a back-channel chat. And even just helping each other, we've learned about editing wikis. I've spiked into Greece to help a lady with her wiki. And then she turned around with someone in France who will hopefully teach me a few things that I didn't know. And that's just the value of the Skype back channel. Be interested in hearing if anyone else is familiar with that.
That is an interesting thing. And is anybody familiar with that? We would like to hear. Or also, we know we had several folks joining us in the last couple seconds, but also left. So we'd love to hear your stories about communication too. If nobody has that answer for Michael, we are going to move it forward here as we look at it. Only about 20 minutes left. This may be something that Vicki has to talk about for a minute, and that's one of the great things of having them out there with us. But the idea of these class monitoring portals, I was blown away by these, and just the whole idea that you are setting up a way of monitoring every single thing that goes on in the project, in a collaborative project, and it all funnels through the class monitoring portal. Is that something that's just with your flat classroom projects, or all of them, Digiteen, Eracism, Gen Ed, those, or are those the ones for the younger kids too? How do those get set up? Are they set up with teachers? Go ahead.
So I've put in the one that John Langley created for NetGen. It's a practice that if you have a public project, it has to have a public RSS feed. And you can see the one we have set up for NetGen. And NetMath is perfect for this. Yes, David, because David Truss is in the room with us, because you can publish it easily. So this is a published set, and you can see each of the groups, and you've got the main parts. So if you have a public project, it is absolutely essential to set up a class monitoring portal, because otherwise it becomes too cumbersome and you miss things when you monitor, when you share. And part of having a set of best practices for teachers is that they kind of have one place to go. You have to keep it simple. test method to keep it simple, you know. So this keeps it simple so they can look and they can see, you know, what's going on the project, what are the discussions, what's happening. And a lot of times just the comments that you see happen. Now you'll notice that we have a new protocol on our site. We actually have the students add their class, the initials for their school on the end of their user ID. And that actually is to make it very simple for us to be able to tell who's having the conversations, if it's something we need to be concerned about or that sort of thing. So, you know, we're kind of evolving in our best practices, but I just could not have a public project without being able to monitor. And of course, you know, the thing about Edmodo, and yes, we use Edmodo for DigiTeen, and I had a set of kids in it last time, that I found is it's a little bit tricky to go in and see exactly, make sure you've gotten everything. And with this, once you subscribe, it'll mark it red, and you'll know what happened since yesterday. So you can kind of mark them red and that sort of thing. But Edmodo is great too. Of course, it's private, so you can't build a CMP for that. But if you're public, you should build a classroom monitoring portal. Anytime I have my kids public, anytime I have them create a public blog, a public YouTube channel, anything public, I pull into my classroom monitoring portal so I can keep up on it.
Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question about classroom monitoring portals. I have one for my class, and I started having my students create ones for theirs, and unfortunately, it got kind of quickly out of hand where they started adding so much personal stuff that it was kind of, was starting to kind of overshadow their updates that they were doing in their projects. So I wanted to ask Vicki if she recommended the students have classroom monitoring portals as well as the teacher, and if so, do you have any suggestions on how to kind of keep them focused on just these updates when it's very easy for them to start adding all kinds of other updates to all their personal sites and things like that?
Well, you know, if you're setting it up to pull in your public, their educational work, you know, this whole idea of being a professional student, we talk more about it in the citizenship chapter, is this whole idea of you are a professional student, and in your professional spaces, you know, there's certain things that I don't go talk about with the other teachers or in the staff meeting. And I think keeping focus and understanding the context of what is appropriate for different circumstances is very important for students, and a lot of them do not understand it. So I'm always clear with my students. I run an educational network, not a social network. And if it becomes, you know, silly, as Julie says, rubbish, you have to pull them back in and say, you know, is this appropriate for school? I'm your teacher. Where, you know, I don't mind a little bit of off to the side, but there is a line between an educational network and a social network. Now, the students do create their own personal learning networks. I call it a personal learning network because it is personal to the students. Each of them have a different topic, so we help them use iGoogle for that, for our projects, and it should evolve. So all of the pull strategies we talked about in the last chapter, I teach my students, you know, how you find hashtags that you're interested in, how you find things that you're interested in there. But that is a great question, and it's something that all of us come up against, especially if you have kids who have been sheltered, who haven't been allowed to get on Facebook, they haven't been allowed to get in social media, they don't have access to internet at home. They are so ready for that outlet, they feel like they're missing out on part of their life, and you give them this opportunity, and all of a sudden, here they go, they are ready to just jump in and share everything and socialize, and it's just not really appropriate for school. The MacArthur Foundation calls it the hidden curriculum. There's a hidden curriculum for those who have access to Facebook and those who do not, and I think those that don't have access are very, very eager. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but yes, I do teach my students to build a personal learning network, but as a teacher, of course, we have to monitor what's going on with our projects, and that's what the CMP is for.
Any other thoughts about class monitoring pearls before we move on? I see some chats still going on, but anybody have any questions you want to do microphone? All right, I'll take that as a no. Moving on over into teacher sourcing. Oh, and I moved at the exact same time. Oh, come back. Here we go. Teacher sourcing, which is sort of a subset of crowdsourcing. And I guess the issue that comes to my mind I'm stuck with, and now the simple answer is going to be pre-planning and communication. I'm hoping that somebody can take this a step or two deeper. How do you get all the teachers on the same page? I think we've all had the experience of working with somebody or some buddies and having to shoulder more of the load than share, or working with somebody and not having the opportunity to shoulder your fair share of the load. So besides the obvious, you know, planning and communication, or even within those obvious, what are some tips or some experiences people have had that could help with that? Go ahead, Michael.
This is an area where I've had a little bit of experience. I just quickly answered to Vicki. Teachers sharing their emails, very few of them do. We do collect teachers' emails, but they're kept in a private spreadsheet that we only share by email. I think Tina is the exception. Just to get back to teacher sourcing, this is the single, probably the only reason why Global Classroom exists today. Because when my friend Deb Frazier said that we're going to run for a year, and we were going to try and get someone from six continents, I did the only thing I knew how, which was to tweet it. And when we had 30 people signed up within 2 weeks, we were starting to pull our hair out about how on earth we were going to run a project of this magnitude. So what I did was I created a Google spreadsheet or a Google form and basically asked teachers how they wanted to connect and collaborate. I think we ended up with about 50 people responding to that. And that's how we came up with our Edmodo groups, Facebook group, Skype, and eventually the Global Classroom Twitter chats. One of the key questions that I put into that survey was, I'm not planning to do this myself. If you want to, you're going to have to help us run it. Which is why we ended up, for example, with the Edmodo groups, because we had Teresa and Tina hopping up and down saying, we want Edmodo, which I'd never heard of or used. And I said, well, if you want it, you guys can run it. And it turned out to be one of the best things we ever did. So for us, teacher sourcing has made our work possible. Now we're run by about, I think we have about 8 teachers on our management team this year across 6 continents. And we're hoping to expand that next year. because frankly the workload, even my workload, has still been pretty significant, even with sharing the work. But yeah, there's this concept, which I hadn't really put it down, hadn't come up with the word, but yeah, we're all volunteers. We'd like to be paid for this kind of work, but sadly we can't. Anyway, I'll hand back the mic. Let's hear some more ideas around this idea of teacher sourcing or sharing the work with colleagues. Go ahead, welcome. Take the mic there.
I guess from my perspective, since I work with about 12 different teachers from K through 5, I'm struggling with the concept of I would get lots of buy-in from maybe two or three of them, and then I wouldn't get much from the rest of them. And I guess I kind of struggled with, why aren't they more willing? Is it time? Is it energy? Is it fear? And that quote that you just put up there, I just decided that if it's something that I thought was important, that I had to target the teachers for the people who had the most enthusiasm, who I knew would be willing. And I kind of worked with them and also with their students, because the ground up approach, I think, is going to work eventually, because if it comes from the students, if it comes from the teachers, then it's going to start bubbling up. And it's going to start being kind of, infectious kind of. So that's kind of where I'm trying to make my focus is. I'm not trying to get everybody on the same page, because I have so many different people who I work with from so many different levels. But I'm starting with the people who were the most enthusiastic and kind of building from there.
Something that I know Ben and I have worked on also, I hate to mention Wiki's in front of Vicky's kind of the daunting idea. But Ben and I work with, there's 8 of us that work well together, and we have lots of resources that we use, not necessarily for a specific project, but some of them are for specific projects, and we sort of use a use or lose attitude, but we create resources and share them by putting them up on the wiki and then by subscribing to the wiki. It emails us when somebody's changed the page. And I would say there are probably 4 or 5 out of 8 of us who definitely do more of the heavy lifting, but it's been a great tool for the last, I don't know, maybe 6 years, where we've shared resources for a various number of ongoing projects.
Yeah, I'd like to go with a personal experience of my own too. Maybe put this out to the group here, because I'm curious of what some of my great minds here would have to say. But I've tried to go on my own sometimes and do some global projects, specifically around books that my classes have been reading. And so I've tried to make attempts to connect with teachers. And what I find a lot of is I find a lot of high level of interest in the beginning phases. I want to join in. Let's do this. This is a great idea. Let's communicate, let's collaborate, and then a fizzling as it goes along, either
teacher's not able to keep up with it, or the running into an issue of time, or maybe it wasn't that great an idea in the beginning, and so I'm glad I end up, you know, doing a lot of the work. I end up, you know, setting everything up only to have it sort of fizzle out in the end. So wondering what the advice might be for a teacher who's in that sort of position of doing all the work and not having the people who say they want to join in. Any are you able to comment on that? Because that would be really awesome if you could help me. Yes, Carol, go ahead, Carol.
I'm going to say this again. It all goes back to relationships. I think I've had people fizzle out on me too, and I literally, and this is so hilarious, I pick up the phone and I call them, because a lot of times they are just intimidated by the project, or they don't know what to do next, and I've even had people where I've actually gotten kind of driven, because I start projects small, locally first, and actually be with them and walk them through stuff. And I think some of us just think as we do these projects, oh, everyone can do it. I think we have to really understand that there's a lot of people out there that get very intimidated by some of the, all the different arrows, I call them, coming at you with all the different things that you can do with a global project, that some people just need that just extra holding their hand and just walking them through some stuff, and then they're on board. But I think that's one of the things we need to do is just really reach out to some of these newbies, and I think that's one of our things that we have to do.
I think that's huge. Before we run out of time, thanks, Carol, for that. I want to pass it over to Michael. Go ahead, Michael.
Just very quickly, we've had a couple of teachers who joined us 6 months ago, who are starting to connect with us literally 6 months later, and ironically enough, some of them are coming through Twitter, but most of them are coming through the Skype instant message group. We had a lady in Taiwan. No, she's not one. She's took about 2 months, I think, to gain the confidence to talk to us. But just through informal conversations and their assistance, she's become one of our most amazing global classroom teachers. So a little bit of assistance goes a long way.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. I do think the key is the relationship, because I thought I was doing everything right. I mean, very woke, you know, my personal opinion, very well planned out, you know, little collaborative projects, you know, frequent emails, keeping everybody up to date, up to speed, and I was very enthusiastic, very excited. I think that's the element that's missing. And it's funny, I just blogged about it because it came up a couple times ago, this idea of building these teacher relationships, and Neil hit it on the head. He said it's not going to fizzle if you know somebody. We do have to blow through this and make sure there's one last second for Q&A here as we're going about 2 minutes. Any final questions or comments from the group, go ahead, take the mic. And Neil, did you have any parting thoughts before we go?
I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I thought that was a very insightful conversation. I learned a lot from this one. I think the communication I said in the beginning is, you know, it's the key to life. And as life changes in the 21st century, we have to change how we communicate. And whether it's a project that lasts 8 months, like I said, in the shadow, or a project that lasts for just a day or two,
communication really is the key, and I think this chapter does an excellent job of laying out the pros and cons and the methods for doing it. So thanks for that.
Yeah, this conversation has been, we are cramming in some great stuff into these hours that we've been spending talking about the book. Vicki, did you have a final thought for the group here before we go?
I just appreciate all of you coming and having these great conversations. The purpose of this is to take in and make it a part of the archive of the Flat Classroom book online, so that people can come after and kind of feel what it feels like to get started and to have questions, and they can see the struggle. You know, if people think that this is easy, then they're going to fail. But it's also exciting. I've been watching a great documentary called Happy, and it's about people who are happy. And it was saying that if you do things for money or for power or that sort of thing, that you tend to be an unhappy person. But if people who do things because they want to help, and also novel experiences and relationships, that these are the things, these intrinsic things that will actually make you happier. It's a great documentary. You can rent it on iTunes or for your iPad or Netflix and that sort of thing. But, anyway, it's just a great a thought, and I think that you're going to find that those people who help and who make it a goal to be helpful and to build these relationships, it's going to make you happier as a teacher. It's also going to help the students really start to harness peer pressure for good. Excited about seeing what the future holds as we start talking about these pedagogies and really bring this stuff out on the table and kind of formalize how does this work. So thanks everybody for coming, and I'll be on the Ming. A lot of folks are starting to comment and share, and again, hat tip to Mark Myers for being one of our top contributors on the Ming this week, and thanks again to David Truss for the great tweeting he's doing in the back channel on Flat Class. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. And again, we've got Twitter handles coming up here. Make sure you follow those. And us at Engaging Ed, we've been writing some blog posts every week, too. And Mark asked about an archive or recording. I think that recording will be up real soon. So thanks, everybody. Until next time, Monday, April 2nd, 6 a.m. Eastern. This has been signing off. Take care.